It is 8:30, and you are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP at 90.3 FM Seattle. And we have live in the studios with us once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State. How are you both this morning?
Good.
We're fine.
Very good.
All 16 of us.
What?
Oh, we were down in Florida getting ourselves duplicated this week.
That's right. It's getting pretty crowded in here.
That's what that box of little test tubes is.
Yeah, exactly. No, I am so glad that was like first announced or at least claimed by this wingnut cult, just because it underscores how morally, ethically bankrupt the whole thing is. But very, very silly. What a gift for the new year. Maybe we'll have six or seven little baby New Year's. 2003 is coming in.
All identical.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to be getting to this year's most overrated and underrated stories. But before that, we should probably brush upon a couple things that happened this week. One of those is the stepped up attacks by the U.S. on Iraq.
Yeah, the U.S. has been stepping up its efforts to destabilize the Iraqi government in the past 2 weeks. They've done a number of things. They hosted the Conference of Iraqi Exiles in London, not this past week, but the week before, where basically trying to do what they did with Afghanistan, get a bunch of delegates together and put together what they think should be a transitional government, or at least a group of people who can help the U.S. administer Iraq after the war. They sponsored it, and they pretty much steered it. And the person who was in charge was Zalmay Khalilzad, the same guy who was in charge of doing the same for Afghanistan. In addition, the U.S.
With such great success.
Right. In addition, the U.S. has also set up a radio broadcast into Iraq from American planes flying at night near Iraqi airspace. The broadcast began December 12th. They play Arabic music, and they broadcast anti-Saddam messages. The U.S. has also moved U.S. troops and supplies across the border into northern Iraq from Turkey. Turkish TV reported that 50 U.S. trucks and some troops were taking supplies into northern Iraq. It was confirmed by Al Jazeera, and the only news organization that picked it up in the U.S. and reported it was Reuters, although the New York Times has gone to great lengths to quote Pentagon sources saying that it's not true, it's not true, it's not true. But you know that the U.S. has been supporting the Kurds in northern Iraq, and it's highly likely that there are now U.S. troops and supplies in northern Iraq. It was also leaked last week that U.S. intelligence agents have been throwing millions of dollars at tribal chiefs in central Iraq, in the rural areas around Baghdad. They've been doing this for weeks now. Of course, they can't do that in southern Iraq because the Shiite tribal leaders still remember how we sold them out after the Gulf War when we said we would support them in their uprising, and then we didn't, and they were massacred by Saddam Hussein. The CIA was recently given about $200 million to pay for covert operations in Iraq, and this is where a lot of that money is going, is to tribal leaders in rural areas around Baghdad, hoping that they won't support Saddam Hussein once an invasion begins. Currently, the U.S. is conducting live fire exercises in Kuwait, just a few miles from the Iraqi border. At least one analyst has said that this might draw, Daniel Ellsberg, in fact, has the person who leaked the Pentagon Papers during the Vietnam War, has said that he believes this is a way to try to draw Iraqi fire and start a war before there's any talk of U.N. inspections and the results of those. Also, 2 days after Christmas, that was just yesterday, Bush gave an order to deploy a couple of aircraft carriers with their battle groups, two amphibious assault groups, and a large number of Air Force aircraft to the Gulf, which will add at least another 20,000 troops, probably more, to the 50,000 that are already there. So he's been ramping it up of late. And the most important thing that has happened is that the U.S. bombing campaign has changed. Now, we've been bombing Iraq, as many of our listeners already know, we've been bombing Iraq all along in the no-fly zones under the excuse that Iraqi radar and Iraqi anti-aircraft batteries are targeting the U.S. planes that patrol the no-fly zones. However, the nature of that bombing has changed. They're now not only bombing anti-aircraft facilities and radar facilities, they're also targeting command bunkers, command facilities, and communications equipment. And they're bombing much more heavily now, and they're bombing with much more higher-powered ordnance. So basically, the aerial bombing of the aerial bombing campaign of Iraq has already begun with no coverage. No coverage here in the U.S.
Yeah, I want to underscore a couple things for that. One is that this information is pretty freely available in much of the rest of the world. It's only in the U.S. that is not being covered. And you know, you wonder why. I mean, we talk about these things many times on this show, but it really needs to be underscored, number one, that it's not being covered and what that says. Number two, that it is available on the Internet for people who are interested. www.guardian.co.uk, independent.co.uk, the BBC.co.uk, all British sources that have been covering this very well. So that's one sort of area of concern.
And if you scan the back pages of the Washington Post and the New York Times, you might find some mention of this.
Yes, usually in the context of Pentagon people denying reports. The original reports themselves, of course, were never covered, but the denials are covered. So you kind of have to read between the lines on a lot of these things.
And if you have access to the Associated Press and the Reuters news wires, you might find some of this information, but it never gets picked up by your local newspaper.
Many other things don't too. The other thing that's very interesting about this is that the United States is doing this. They are in many ways already starting their war. They're certainly laying the groundwork on the expectation of a war. They're doing it before any kind of report on weapons of mass destruction is in, before any kind of authorization from the United Nations or the Security Council. They are essentially going ahead and prosecuting exactly the unilateral war that they promised they would not do.
And they're doing it without a formal declaration of war as well.
Yes.
I don't know if they're really laying the groundwork. Sounds like they're destroying the groundwork.
Yeah, that's
very much the point,
so.
Yes.
Moving along, it looks like there was an article in one of the local papers of torture becoming part of U.S. foreign policy.
Yes, folks.
Or more a part of U.S. foreign policy, but yeah.
Yeah, folks might remember the discussion earlier this year or late last year about whether or not the U.S. should engage in torturing suspects arrested for terrorism. And one of the things that was proposed as a solution was to render those people over to governments that could torture them for us. And that, in fact, is what the U.S. government is doing.
Many of them with our financial support as well.
Right. Yeah. The Washington Post article and I urge people to look it up. It's entitled, U.S. Decries Abuse But Defends Interrogations, Stress and Duress Tactics Used on Terrorism Suspects Held in Secret Overseas Facilities. And it was printed on Thursday, December 26th on the front page of the Washington Post. It was run in an abbreviated form under less interesting headlines in some local places, but I suggest you go to the source and look it up. You can find it online at www.washingtonpost.com. And basically it details extensive interviews with U.S. intelligence officials and sources about the detention and torture of prisoners taken in the war on terrorism, how most of them have been turned over to countries that are known to use torture, including nations condemned by our own State Department for using torture, specifically Jordan, Egypt, Syria, and Morocco. And even worse, the CIA also oversees torture at the Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan, where two prisoners have died while in U.S. custody, and there's now an ongoing investigation into that, although it's basically the Pentagon investigating itself. And the torture is also being overseen by CIA agents in so-called secret facilities, one of which is on Diego Garcia, an island in the Indian Ocean that we lease from the United Kingdom, from Britain. And it's really a pretty horrific report. People ought to read it.
Yeah. A couple of other things on this also. Number one, some of these allegations have also come out regarding prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. And those people are not actually, they're widely, although not by the Bush administration, considered prisoners of war. But the pretext that is being used for being held is not so much that they are suspects, but that they are material witnesses. So this is even happening for people from which the U.S. government wants information, even if they themselves are either not suspected of crimes themselves or of any kind of high-ranking crimes, or if they were simply soldiers defending their own country against an invasion by a country halfway around. around the world. So that's I forgot the other place I was going with that. So
the interesting thing about the prisoners being held in these secret facilities or in places like Guantanamo Bay or Diego Garcia or inside Afghanistan is that these prisoners have no legal status. They're not being admitted under by the U.S. that they should be treated under the Geneva Conventions. They're not being admitted as prisoners of war. They're given this kind of legal limbo, and they're being denied access to lawyers and to human rights groups, to the Red Cross, to doctors who could verify that torture is occurring. So you're not hearing reports about it anywhere else except by these investigative journalists who will go out on a limb and do interviews and do this kind of research. So people really ought to read it, pass it around, support it. They were able to get some really great quotes from some of these guys, including my favorite, which is, quote, "If you don't violate someone's human rights some of the time, you probably aren't doing your job," end quote.
Yeah.
These are the kind of guys who are in charge of our so-called war on terrorism, and these are the kind of guys that some of these people are fighting against when they say that America is the great Satan. I mean, it's because we sanction this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and we're paying for it as well. The other thing that's interesting about this, and that did remind me of where I was going to go earlier, that some of this information, and you're seeing it also with the war against Iraq and several of the other more controversial areas, there's tremendous dissent from within the armed forces. There was a very good interview with Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker a couple, 3 weeks ago. He's an investigative journalist who's been around for many, many years, doing a lot of very good articles on the U.S. intelligence community and a lot of these what's been going on in Afghanistan and the follow-up to that war, talking about the level of dissension within the military and within the intelligence communities about the use of some of these tactics, and how you've got civilians coming in overseeing a lot of these programs who are, you know, much, much less concerned about some of the historic rules of war or how that precedent might in the future be used against American soldiers, which is a lot of what they're concerned about.
All right, and moving along, last thing from this week, North Korea, one of the three Bush-declared axis of evil countries, is getting a lot of coverage.
Yeah, and you know, I'm beginning to be very concerned at this point that the United States might do one of these sort of preemptive bombing runs against North Korea, and we might be going into a war there even before we have the formal war declared or formal un-war declared against Iraq. North Korea seems to be playing a very, very interesting and a very troubling game of brinksmanship with the United States around, in many ways, trying to provoke a confrontation around its nuclear program. And this is done in the context of similar tactics, actually, that were used by North Korea about 8 years ago in 1994 against the Clinton administration, where there were concerns at that point about North Korea's development of a nuclear program. It was eventually brokered. We've had in South Korea on the Korean Peninsula recently yet another instance where a presidential or a leadership election was decided by a candidate who won basically running on an anti-American, anti-Bush platform. Anti-Americanism very high around the world for
at least the past 2 years.
Yeah, at least the past 2 years for reasons that we, just discussed, really. I mean, I've been discussing for weeks and months. But North Korea seems to be trying to use this as an opportunity to play the same sort of a game. The difference is you've now got people in Washington, D.C. running things who are just as dismissive of international law and international norms as Kim Il-jung too is. And it's a very, very dangerous game that's unfolding on the Korean Peninsula. And, really, other than that, we have lots of other things to get to, but I just want to flag people to keep an eye on that, because it's not just a passing little diplomatic squabble.
But people should also keep in mind, too, that this is kind of the North Korean way of negotiating.
Yeah,
this is
very
exactly
much so.
How they did it back in 1994, and when they did it that way,
it worked out very well.
They got concessions to get fuel oil and to get two commercial nuclear reactors built. Now, construction has never started on those two commercial nuclear reactors, which you could not make fuel for weapons from. The construction never started principally because of Republicans in Congress would not let it go forward. And you could say that this is sort of the culmination of North Korean frustration because they've only received half of the agreement. And they're saying, well, if you won't let us have those reactors, at least give us back the ones we built. So people should also keep that in mind while they're watching this unfold.
Yeah, very much so.
All right. Well, we have just short of 15 minutes to cover the year's most underrated and overrated
stories.
We'll
do this fast.
Yeah, and parenthetically, there's a much longer and more complete description of all of this in the current issue of Eat the State that's online at www.eatthestate.org. And also, I have a different version of the same list will be up on the Working for Change column that I do next week, but the one that's up there right now is an overview of about a dozen or so of the wars that we're involved in right now, and also why with the emergence of a peace movement and some other developments, I think there's some hope for 2003. So as you're going through the underreported stories or the stories that we haven't been paying enough attention to, bear in mind that it's not all grimness and darkness for 2003.
All right, so have at it.
Okay, our overrated stories. We're just going to mention some of these. The Axis of Evil, which I really think now is the point of evil.
The thousand points of
one
evil.
One target.
Yeah, and they're all within the Beltway, basically, except for a few in the financial districts of New York and other cities.
Iraq's weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Do they or don't they have them? Well, we won't know until the inspectors make their report, so let's just shut up about them for a while. Okay?
Yeah, and not only that, but it's really not what the conflict is about to begin with, so just let it rest.
Yeah. Economic recovery, it's just around the corner. And around the next corner,
and the next corner. And, oh, by the way, how about those weapons of mass destruction? Because we can't dwell on that economic recovery enough.
That's right. Catholic sex scandals.
Especially the ones that happened in 1975 or so and are reported like they're current breaking news.
Uh-huh. Smallpox threat. Your chances of getting it are vanishingly small, but your chance of being injured by the vaccine is pretty significant. What are they talking about? The smallpox threat.
John Walker Lind, it's amazing how a dirty, filthy traitor can become a confused kid with a heart of gold when dad can afford good lawyers.
Dirty bombs. Gosh, you know, it seems to me that nuclear waste is right now moving down I-5 on its way to Yucca Mountain. I think I'm more worried about our own government's dirty bomb than I am about a terrorist dirty bomb.
And by the way, did anybody notice that story in the paper a couple weeks ago was juxtaposed next to a study on how many accidents there were on I-5?
Yeah.
And oh, last but not least, kidnapped children. The story that terrifies parents everywhere, even though it's a non-story, the rates weren't up, and most kidnappings are not by strangers, they're custody disputes.
Pretty good. Our underrated stories, the ones that we should have seen more of this year in the media. Why don't you go ahead and start yours, list, John?
Oh dear, there's a lot to go through. Well, we've got several sort of broad constellations and categories of them. One of them is the Middle East in general, and all of the things that have been going on there that we haven't heard a lot about. In Iraq, of course, at the same time that we're hearing endlessly about the weapons of mass destruction, we're not hearing about the impact of the economic sanctions. We're not hearing, as Maria was talking about earlier, about the sustained and escalated bombing campaigns. We're not hearing about what the potential effects of that war would be, both upon the Iraqi people, because we're talking about war against 23 million people, not against one person. We're not talking about the environmental consequences about it. We're certainly not talking about international response, what the U.S. has thought of and much of the rest of the world, the emergence in the U.S. and around the world of an enormous peace movement, half a million people in Florence, Italy, 400,000 people in London, 100,000 people in Washington, D.C.
A peace movement to prevent war. Which is a new and wonderful thing, I think.
And a peace movement that organized itself really in a matter of weeks, or has begun to organize itself in a matter of weeks. Many people have seen, there is actually a good photo of it on the current issue of Seattle Gay News, the photo that's going around of 800 out of 8,000 people in Port Townsend, Washington, all posing for one anti-war photograph. There are marches and groups happening in small towns, medium-sized cities, large cities, all across the country, completely underneath the radar. It's one of the things, actually, I'm very hopeful about for 2003.
And in other news in the Middle East that wasn't covered very well is the there's the fact that regime change is actually failing in Afghanistan. There's
brutally
daily fighting. There is factional infighting going on, and U.S. troops are under constant attack there, daily attack in Afghanistan. We still have a war going there, and Iraq would not be our primary war. It would be our second war if it starts soon.
Yeah, and the fate of women has not improved in Afghanistan. Democracy is a failure. The U.S. doesn't...
Human rights. People are not getting fed there.
The U.S. puppet regime there, well, the Loya Jirga and the whole idea that there was
barely
a democratic consultation
was also a
farce. That was underreported. But the government doesn't really even have control of almost all the country. So, yeah, we talk about what we want to do to bring democracy to Iraq. We can't even bring it to the United States, let alone Afghanistan. I don't know how anybody thinks they're going to do it in Iraq.
What about that other conflict in the Middle East, Jav?
Oh, the one in Israel and Palestine. You may vaguely remember something about Israeli tanks rolling into the West Bank sometime around Easter and committing these horrible human rights atrocities. They've never stopped. Those atrocities are continuing. Israeli troops continue to occupy major parts of almost every Palestinian city. The democratically elected Palestinian Authority has essentially been dismantled. The settler communities, which let's call settlers for what it is, they expropriate people's land and then settle on top of where your bulldozed house used to be, those continue apace, all in violation of international law, all in violation of the Oslo Accord, and all done with U.S. weaponry and U.S. tax dollars and the full backing of the Bush administration.
Now, I called Afghanistan the primary war and Iraq the secondary war, but there's really another major U.S. war going on.
Tertiary.
But perhaps it's the primary war, the war on drugs, and it's being mostly fought out at this moment in Colombia, isn't that correct?
Actually, all through the Andean Mountains. Colombia is the major one. We've dramatically escalated the amount of money and the amount of military hardware that's gone into Colombia since the election of a far-right third-party candidate who first got his notoriety 10 years ago as a provincial governor for helping to found the paramilitaries, that the far-right paramilitaries that are associated with at least 80% of the human rights abuses in the country with the worst human rights record in the Western Hemisphere. This is the Pentagon's guy. This is the Bush administration's guy. And since then, we have dramatically escalated the number of American personnel down there. We have shifted away from using the war on drugs as a cover for assisting the Colombian government in its war against the guerrillas that has been going on for a long time. The war has been escalating dramatically in recent months, and we've shifted away from using the war on drugs as a cover to specifically saying we're helping in the shooting war itself. And Colombia has gone from accepting U.S. assistance to counting on U.S. assistance as part of its military strategy. It's a very dangerous, dramatic escalation. Meanwhile, in neighboring Venezuela, the U.S.-backed coup, there's another underreported story in April, was stemmed essentially by popular opposition and massive demonstrations in the streets. So there's been another tactic that's been tried for the last 3 weeks or so, which is the massive general strike called not by laborers but by the business leaders, again associated with the old oligarchs and Bush administration and State Department. That is unfolding as we speak, and you can bet that the CIA and the Bush administration are up to their eyeballs in that one. Meanwhile, across South America, we saw it most dramatically in the election of Lula to the presidency of Brazil, another anti-Bush administration candidate. But the popular opposition to neoliberalism, what we call free trade, has been dramatically escalating, especially in South America, over the past year. Very, very important story. The debate over neoliberalism, the IMF, structural adjustments, it is not over. It's not decided that this is the best and only way to go. In fact, the only place where people seem to think that's working right now is in Washington, D.C.
The other stories that haven't been covered as far as the U.S. foreign policy is concerned, I think the worst aspect of it is the Bush administration snuggling up to the world's worst military in Indonesia. The Indonesian military is responsible for massacres in Aceh province, in East Timor, in Irian Jaya. They have trained fundamentalist Muslim militias that are responsible for terrible sectarian violence all across the Indonesian archipelago. And Indonesia pretty much and the Indonesian military pretty much controls the government of its own country. Yet the Bush administration wants to resume ties with the Indonesian military and to provide it a lot of aid and training. Also, we haven't heard about the death of U.S. troops in the Philippines. That's part of the war on terrorism. That has not been covered very well. They haven't covered, the press has not covered military corporate welfare. First, it was $10 billion for the war on terrorism, then another $10 billion. And next year, it's going to be another $18 billion. And the Pentagon is still complaining that that's not enough.
And it's almost all going to weapons rather than personnel. It's almost all contracts to the Martin Mariettas and Honeywells and Raytheons of the world.
And I understand those corporations have developed a new motto, sales motto for this year, the enemy of my enemy is my customer.
I think it's just, you know, just rent the backhoe and bring the cash in here. the column that I mentioned earlier at workingforchange.com has a list of 12 different areas of the world where we are essentially, you know, militarily engaged right now. In almost every case is with pretty brutal allies, quote unquote. Uzbekistan, Pakistan, Georgia. We put troops in this year. We're helping to assassinate people with the government of Yemen. All sorts of different places where we're creating some really ugly precedents and engendering a lot of hatred.
Yeah. In the meantime, the Pentagon's throwing those billions of dollars at these major corporations for more kill toys. The corporate reform movement is pretty much on the skids. There was the passage of the corporate reform bill, but we're still waiting for an accounting oversight board to get set up and running. The Bush administration has not even appointed a head for the accounting oversight board. The person that was going to head it up, William Webster, had to resign because he himself was involved in some nasty corporate dealings. The same is true for the former head of the Security and Exchange Commission, replaced by a Wall Street insider who's going to be doing about as much reform as the Bush administration is doing for environmental laws. In other words, gutting the whole corporate reform movement. So we're not going to see a whole lot on that. And the press has just not been covering it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, the Bush administration has been able to get fast-track trade authority passed in the dead of night in Congress.
Without debate.
Yeah, something that was denied the Clinton administration, but the Bush administration was able to secretly get it done. So now George Bush can sign trade deals and without much oversight at all. On the economic front, Bush has flunked the economy test. His tax cuts are handouts to the rich, but they do nothing to stimulate the economy. That's a story that the press has not covered.
And it not only do nothing, but have done nothing. I mean, they were supposed to have already had the effect and reversed the economy, and it simply has not happened. And we've particularly seen that here in the Pacific Northwest, and yet all we can talk about here is the failure of the dot-coms. It's not just the dot-coms. And meanwhile, the retirement funds of a lot of people who were giving a song and dance about the stock market, that song and dance has never seriously been challenged.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing that should be driving the economic recovery but has actually been pushing the economic recovery further and further away is not been covered by the press, and that's the high consumer debt levels and the high level of bankruptcy in America.
Yeah.
It's not just businesses that are declaring bankruptcy right and left. It is also people like you and me.
We're running out of time, obviously. Mm-hmm. And there's lots more. Again, it's at www.eatthestate.org. There's 46 states this year that have severe budget shortfalls. Washington State is only one of them. In almost every one of those states, and certainly at the federal level, at the county level, at the city level, all up and down the government food chain, the money is coming out of the safety net. It's coming out of programs for the people who need it most at the time when they need it most. And the effects of those and the numbers on those are things you can get on this program, but you generally aren't going to be reading on the paper or seeing it on the evening news.
Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. Talking this week, once again, with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State, and tell people, where can they find Eat the State?
free publication that comes out every other week. It is the 2002 Media Follies is the big headline this week, and you can find it at bookstores and cafes, places where you get free recyclable paper for your birdcage, and other places where you dispose your used paper. It's also available on the web. Once again, the address, www.eatthestate.org. We also are volunteer. We all help out with stories. We help out with news ideas. We get feedback. If you'd like to help out, you can give us a phone call. The number is area code 206-903-9461. And we'll be around and doing the same thing all throughout 2003.